Welcome to SCOTUSCast. On February 19, 2008, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Morgan Stanley Capital v. Public Utility District. The case poses the following questions. Under what conditions, if any, should the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission have the power to invalidate facially valid wholesale energy contracts? Did the unusual conditions of the energy market during the California energy crisis justify an exception to the FERC's general policy of respecting contracts set to the market rate? Camlett Shepard's Ray Gifford discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Attorney Gifford.
This is Ray Gifford. I'm a partner at Camlett Shepard & Reichert in Denver, Colorado. The case we're going to discuss today is Morgan Stanley Capital Group v. Public Utility District No. 1. The Supreme Court heard oral argument in this case on February 19, 2008. The background of the case is the 2000-2001 California energy crisis, when, largely due to a state regulatory scheme with severe flaws, California energy markets exhibited extreme price volatility, and where energy trading on the spot markets could trade for 10 to 15 times normal baseline costs. As such, energy traders and other middlemen like Morgan Stanley Capital Group became very active in these markets, looking for opportunities to enter into longer-term contracts with end-use utilities and utility districts. These long-term contracts were entered into in part to tamp down the price volatility on the spot market, which was being exacerbated by rules in the California Energy Exchange that mandated most energy be traded only on the spot market and disfavored long-term contracts. Because long-term contracts were seen as a partial correction to the spot market volatility and the energy shortages that were occurring, entities like Morgan Stanley Capital, and others entered into long-term contracts with the utility districts. The contracts at issue in this case were long-term contracts for around $105 a megawatt hour. By way of contrast, the spot markets at the time were exhibiting prices approaching $300 a megawatt hour, depending on the time of day. Also, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is a party to this case, had indicated during this time that it would scrutinize any contracts that whose average price exceeded $74 a megawatt hour. The contracts entered into here were so-called market-based contracts subject to the jurisdiction of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Since the 1970s, the FERC had allowed these market-based contracts with some limited degree of retrospective review and limited authority of the FERC to abrogate contracts that were not found, quote, just and reasonable, end quote. FERC, and before that, the Federal Power Commission, had allowed market-based contracts for interstate wholesale power since the 1950s. Under the Federal Power Act, these contracts were presumptively valid, subject only to a slight retrospective review and chance of abrogation under the public interest standard or, as the case gets joined here, the just and reasonable rate standard of public utility law. Once the California energy crisis abated, the buyers here, Snohomish Public Utility District and other related buyers, needless to say, didn't like being inexpensive long-term contracts. So they petitioned the FERC to abrogate these contracts, or that is, declare them invalid, under the just and reasonable rate standards existing in the Federal Power Act. FERC denied these petitions, finding that the just and reasonable standard didn't apply, but the broader public interest standard applied under two 1956 Supreme Court cases, the so-called Mobile and Sierra Doctrine cases, that set the standard for FERC contract review for the last 50 years. Under the FERC decision, the contracts stood. On appeal, the Ninth Circuit disagreed with FERC's interpretation of the Mobile-Sierra Doctrine, finding it applied to only limited circumstances. For instance, said the Ninth Circuit, the Mobile and Sierra cases occurred when the parties were arguing that the prices were too low By contrast, the case brought by the Public Utility District involved claims that the prices were too high. Thus, so the Ninth Circuit said, the Federal Power Act's just and reasonable standard applied, and the FERC must consider a variety of factors relating to the circumstances surrounding the contract's formation and the FERC having an opportunity for initially reviewing the contract. The Ninth Circuit then remanded the case to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to determine whether the Mobile Sierra Review was appropriate to engage in Mobile Sierra Review, and finally to decide whether full, quote, just and reasonableness review was warranted. The Supreme Court granted cert, and thus we end up at oral argument on the 19th. The import of this case from a macro perspective concerns the regulatory ability to abrogate contracts entered into between private parties. Specifically in the power context, it involves the interpretation of the longstanding Mobile Sierra Doctrine, which had always been seen as a bulwark against contract abrogation in power markets. The broader import of this case is when federal regulatory agencies can abrogate facially valid contracts entered into between private parties, and more specifically, the proper interpretation of the Mobile Sierra Doctrine, which for 50 years the Supreme Court had held out as a doctrine that was largely protective of private contracts, but which the Ninth Circuit's reinterpretation left a great deal more room for scrutiny into those contracts depending on the market circumstances at the time they were entered into. It's interesting to note at the outset of this case that both Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Breyer have recused from the case. It's primarily interesting insofar as Justice Breyer, who has in the past shown a great deal of both scholarly and jurisprudential interest in regulatory issues, was not sitting on the case. Nonetheless, based on the tenor of the oral argument, the Ninth Circuit's reinterpretation of Mobile Sierra did not appear to fare well among the justices, as they appeared to express a great deal of deference toward privately negotiated contracts and their presumptive validity. The oral argument can certainly sometimes be misleading as to where the court is going. The main discussions between the advocates and the court concerned the wisdom of abrogating privately entered contracts and the ex ante and ex post effects of there being a strong federal, residual federal abrogation right of long-term contracts and how that would affect the parties' ex ante negotiations for prices and even the existence on offering of such contracts in markets altogether. The petitioners, Morgan Stanley Capital Group, argued that the more exacting retrospective review of contracts urged by the Ninth Circuit's interpretation of the Mobile Sierra Doctrine would bring bad incentives into the contracting milieu, where sellers would be reluctant to sell or enter into long-term contracts because of the increased risk associated with those contracts being retrospectively abrogated. And sellers, correspondingly, would behave opportunistically to engage in long-term contracts that they later knew they could get out of by arguing that the price was too high. The particular circumstances of the California energy crisis provided a good example for the Morgan Stanley petitioners, where their entry into the market and willingness to engage in long-term contracts at $105 a megawatt hour, they cited as positive evidence toward these contracts dampening price volatility and calming down the California energy markets. Indeed, they further noted that the FERC actually encouraged parties to be entering into long-term contracts to help abate the price volatility that was occurring in the California power exchanges. In reply, the Public Utility District argued that the circumstances of the California energy crisis were so chaotic and so difficult to untangle that the FERC needed to retrospectively review these contracts and correct for the market imperfections that were going on at the time. In essence, they urge a wholesale review of the market power that existed at the time by the sellers into the market, and the other surrounding market factors that led to a higher than what they deemed to be normal price. Besides, argued the Public Utility District and the related parties, the Federal Power Act has a clear mandate that rates be just and reasonable, and FERC had the statutory duty to review retrospectively any contract to make sure that they met that standard. They further argued that the FERC had overinterpreted the Mobile Sierra deference to private contracts and that the just and reasonable standard was the appropriate review, and that meant that the FERC had to consider a host of factors, including the market power that may have been possessed by the market actors and the broad market circumstances at the time that may have led to the volatility and the unreasonably high prices. The Public Utility District's Council also noted that FERC had failed to monitor the prices on a going-forward basis as it was supposed to be doing under the Federal Power Act. It was further noted by Justice Ginsburg that FERC itself had concluded that the spot market chaos and exercise of market power had affected the long-term power markets as well, and therefore that these markets could, in fact, be deemed to be revealing prices and rates that were not just and reasonable. In essence, then, the argument broke down into three separate parts. The first involved the policy argument on the wisdom or lack thereof, as the case may be, of FERC retrospectively abrogating long-term contracts that had been freely entered into. Most of the justices seem convinced, and in fact most folks would have to concede, that if long-term contracts were always subject to an exacting retrospective review, that the response of the market would be there simply wouldn't be any long-term contracts. That would be, from a policy perspective, a bad thing. But the response to that gets to the second point that was discussed in the oral argument, that was by the Public Utility District petitioners, that notwithstanding the policy arguments surrounding the wisdom or lack thereof of long-term contract review, the Federal Power Act required it nonetheless. And the Federal Power Act required FERC to make a determination that rates in every long-term power contract were just and reasonable, and that FERC had fallen down on the job here. The third aspect of the case then got to the nub of the legal question, which is the interpretation given to the Federal Power Act under the Mobile and Sierra Doctrines way back in 1956, which, as I stated at the beginning, have consistently been applied to be very deferential to contracts between private parties. The Ninth Circuit's interpretation of Mobile Sierra opened up a much broader line of inquiry and a much broader array of factors that FERC would consider, which in the end, from a policy perspective, would make long-term contracts more insecure obligations. It's, of course, difficult to hazard a guess about which way the court is heading on this, but the first and third factors, namely the policy argument on the wisdom of honoring long-term contracts freely entered into, and the Mobile Sierra kind of prudential requirements reflected under the Federal Power Act for deference to long-term contracts absent extraordinary circumstances, would lead me to believe that the Ninth Circuit's opinion interpreting Mobile Sierra as requiring a broad and searching inquiry into the circumstances surrounding power contracts probably will not stand. Because the Mobile Sierra Doctrine has life outside of the Federal Power Act itself and is often cited in other cases where contract abrogation by federal agencies is discussed, there will be impact to this case beyond just the narrow circumstances of the Federal Power Act, the FERC, and its review of contracts. Indeed, one direction that this case could take the court is into a broader pronouncement about when and what statutory authority needs to exist before an agency can and will even review retrospectively the terms of contracts, much less go ahead and abrogate them. A final footnote to the case and the oral argument itself was that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission itself opposed cert on this case and said that it could apply the Ninth Circuit's interpretation of Mobile Sierra, notwithstanding its disagreement with the circuit court's opinion below. And the court made some hash out of this at the beginning of the oral argument, but didn't really return to it. We shall all, of course, see how the case turns out, but if you were betting, I would expect to see some modification of the Ninth Circuit's interpretation of Mobile Sierra and probably a slightly stronger policy predilection for honoring private contracts than you see in the Ninth Circuit's decision and, in some sense, the FERC's refusal to appeal that. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Again, my name is Ray Gifford. If you have any questions, feel free to contact me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.